Welcome to Day Zero Update for October 19th, 2025. I'm your host, Chris Elogi.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And yeah, two-man crew for this week, and I think next week as well. But we got a pretty good show this week of news. A bunch of stuff has happened. Mm-hmm. We've had a big figure in the industry pass away.
Mm-hmm.
At a pretty young age. We got some games coming out in the near future, as well as a showcase happening. We'll talk about that stuff, as well as some industry mm-hmm. news. Mostly stuff, let's say, involving unions and such. So we'll get to that a little bit later. But before we do that, we'll talk about what we've been playing. And I will start us off here. As I've been playing some Halls of Torment on the PS5, Code 4, mm-hmm. Before it's out later this week. And I've been enjoying it. It really doesn't have an embargo on it, but I guess because it's been out for ages now. So they probably gave up on that. And the nice thing is that the... comes with the DLC, or the version I have is the bundle with the DLC, the Boglands, which I've not been able to get to just yet, but I've been playing to unlock as much as I can for now. Had a few good runs in at least two of the stages I've been in so far. I think I have unlocked.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be working my way through that to get some more stuff done in there. But yeah, it's still quite good. It runs solidly on my PS5 here. It's also going to be out on Xbox this week. DLC, I'm not sure what the price is going to be on that. I'll definitely look that up. I'm not sure if they posted that yet either. But yeah, that's a game that, if you liked your Vampire Survivors, this is one to keep an eye on. Because it's got a lot of similarities with that. Learns a few things from it, particularly to set itself in kind of a Diablo-style world, isometric with kind of similarly like low-res visuals. Gear is like loot is kind of not really a thing. It's more that you find chests on occasion for beating bosses or whatever. That will drop a chest with some loot in it, and then you need to take that to a well to send it up to the well keeper, which then you can purchase it from them to build out your loadout. So at least have one for almost every slot in the game. I think the last one's like a charm slot, something like that, that I need to work towards, but I've been kind of actually paying attention to some of the has a similar kind of mission set up to Vampire Survivors, where there's sort of missions to complete, challenges and such. So this one at least lets you tag one as one that you can follow, and it'll keep track of, you know, if it's do like X amount of damage with a certain ability, it'll keep track of that for you. By default, it'll have one goal. That's kind of your mainline progression goal, I think. At least that seems like the way that it's been beating that to me. So I've been kind of trying to focus on that stuff and, you know, have long runs that will get me other things. So working on that, been pretty good. I have the potion master now, so I can get some potions with a specific item that aids in that. But yeah, that's been real good so far still. Looks great, runs great on PS5. Some nice music as well. But yeah, I'll have more, hopefully more to say by the next show as hopefully I can get to the Boglands. They have added a nice little like practice area that you can go in and just as spawns for a bunch of XP gems to level up your character and pick upgrades and such, as well as a bunch of the things you need to get the other abilities. So you can kind of try to max max stuff out and build out character loadouts and kind of go into a room that has a bunch of like dummies in them that you can have your attacks go and kind of see how that, you know, affects the AOE and all that kind of stuff going on around you. Which is nice. I kind of wish you could just spawn enemies in there or something. Something kind of moving around, but otherwise it's seems pretty cool for what it is. Not sure if there's anything else new that I've noticed just yet. But yeah, unlike Vampire's Virus, where you kind of have to either write down or memorize what specific challenges you're trying to do in a stage, in a run, this kind of lets you, you know, track the one. But then you can also pause and pull up the thing to pick other ones. So it doesn't necessarily punish you for having a bad memory or not, you know, writing things down or whatever.
Right.
Which is kind of the one issue I kind of have with Vampire Survivors, is it could certainly make that stuff a little easier for you. But yeah. So there's that. I did pick up a new game this week, one that seemed really interesting. Ball Pit, the new Devolver Digital game featuring the developer of Kenny's, or no, what, Mr. Sun's Hatbox, I think it is. I think the developer is Kenny Sun. I don't know if this is a solo dev game, but it's probably a pretty small team at that. This game, very different from that one. This game very much is like a mix of brick breaking, maybe some Arkanoid to it, with a little bit of Vampire Survivors to it, and a bit of base building to it. I would say almost like got some vibes from if you mix Vampire Survivors and Loop Hero to it. So you pick your hero, which you start with one, and then you work your way to unlocking another one. And you're kind of walking down these pits that have enemies that are kind of blocks, almost like a box with an enemy in it. And they're kind of slowly moving their way down. You can up the speed if you want for this, but from the start, you're kind of able to move a, you know, an angled cursor around to aim where you want to shoot your balls. And you can shoot them yourself by holding down the right trigger as long as you want to fire them all. Or you can turn on auto shoot, which is what I usually do at a certain point because, you know, you're just shooting them to get them out there. Not really had too many opportunities where I felt like I need to be very precise with them so far, but I've only done like four or five runs at this point. I did unlock a second character who only has the auto shooting on by default, and I don't think you can turn it off. That character is like a cowboy character, so you don't shoot straight. You kind of shoot in a range, like a cone of range where it'll shoot randomly in different directions within that cone. So when you're directing it, and that character, you know, they have different bonuses and all that. So a run, at least in this first stage, was like three bosses, I think. And so you want to break these, you know, boxes before they get down to the bottom of the screen. If they get to the bottom of the screen, they essentially jump at you and do damage to you. So you kind of want to break them as early as possible. And as you break them, they drop little XP orbs to pick up, as well as gold and maybe some other stuff, some materials for the base building part of the game. As well as there's like a couple that kind of give you some different things going on. But as you level, you get a choice of, you know, from like three choices of active or passive abilities. The active ones are going to be in the form of new balls to add to your little lineup of things you're shooting out there. And so, you know, you can get various sort of elemental ones or ones that are essentially have ghost abilities, so they can break through or just shoot through boxes and get to essentially like the the top of the screen and start busting up boxes from the top, which sounds like the thing you want to do, but you do get into some points where you have just a bunch of boxes around, and those balls will essentially get locked up there. They'll be bouncing on things and kind of unable to break through at a certain point. But yeah, once you reach the boss point of a run, you'll see one big box show up. Sometimes we'll do attacks at you, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And you need to try to destroy it before it gets to the bottom of the screen, like everything else. But, you know, if you are unable to do that, if your build's poor, just you're having bad luck and all that, you'll die and go back to the home base, which, mm-hmm. you know, you're kind of at the top part of this pit, which is where you kind of do your base building, where you can lay down. Initially, it's like a wheat field and like a forest to get some wheat and wood. Eventually, I have like rocks I can put down and all this. And once per, you know, run before you go down and do a full run, you can shoot like however many people you have into this little area, and they will essentially... They run on a wheat field, they'll gather wheat, they run into the forest, they'll gather wood, and kind of do that for a couple seconds. It'll let them bounce around, and you kind of aim how you want it to go, and, you know, try and hit everything you can. And I'm sure that you get further into the game, you'll have more stuff and more time for them to go do different things. But you also lay down buildings for to add more, a bunch of different things. I had one down that I think added a new character. Like, that's sort of how I was unlocking characters. I'm blanking on exactly what I was accomplishing with some of that, but like in Loop Hero, that was very much like a means that you were upgrading your character, it seemed like. So yeah, that's kind of a neat little thing. It's you do get to buy other nearby areas with the gold, so if you don't spend it on your upgrades or adding more things to your little patch of land to mine from, you can kind of buy the nearby land, which goes up in price with each one. So it's like $200 initially, that goes up to $300, $400, you know, with each one you buy. And then you start filling it up, and I think it's not too punitive. You can move stuff around, so.
Yeah.
If you want to keep like the things that aren't going to produce anything out of the way, that seems like a thing you can do. But it still has some of the vibes of the like breakout stuff in there, since you're trying to send these little dudes through bouncing around to collect things.
Yep.
Which is really nice. But I can see that getting tedious, especially if you have some bad runs. But I've beaten the first level. And so I think it opened up a second one, but I'm still, you know, that was like the first hour of the game, so I'm still early on. But yeah, has some really nice things going on. And oh yeah, I forgot to mention, they do some interesting things where some enemies will drop this like little rainbow colored power up that essentially allows you to fuse balls or evolve them, like an evolution mechanic.
Yeah.
So you might have one that shoots lasers a certain way, like either horizontally or vertically, and then it'll be like, oh, do you want to merge this with this one that does poison damage to blocks? And it's like, all right. And then while you merges those two together, so that that ball will do poison damage to that, you know, give poison to the block, as well as potentially activate the laser thing. So you kind of, in like late game Vampire Survivors, you can potentially merge things together to free up space, and that's kind of what that is doing.
Right.
When you don't have that ability, it'll usually just add levels to the stuff you already have, but kind of just do some quick level ups without you having to get that to drop when you do the main level up. So it does some, has some really nice little bit of strategy there. So you're trying to find good, you know, builds that will work well together for that. Right. So that ended up working pretty well for my one successful run for that. So yeah, that's Ball. It's on, I think it's on everything. PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, and PC. I've been playing on PC.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly because it was cheaper there. They have bundle discounts for that game. So if you have like Vampire Survivors and maybe like one or two other games, they have bundles for that stuff.
Right.
So you get a little bit of a discount for it, which is nice. So yeah, there's that. That's one to keep an eye on if you like your breakouts or Arkanoid with a bit of roguelike to it.
Mm-hmm.
In some interesting ways. And the other game I've been playing is Pixel Junk Eden 2. This is the one of Q Games' best titles. The first one that Bion worked with Q Games on, providing the music and a lot of the art work for that. And so this is sort of the sequel that came out on the Switch ages ago.
Yeah.
They've done a little bit of tweaking, but it's still largely the same game. But now it's in 4K and has, you know, improved audio and all that kind of stuff. So it looks and sounds a bit better. The Switch version, I remember playing and being like, I don't know if I'm into this, but I think I'm getting the hang of it now that it's here on a platform that I think fits it a bit better. Which is that, unlike the original game where you were essentially working your way through these different gardens that had like five of these seeds that you were kind of, you know, looking to collect that were put throughout the level, here, they kind of have more of a roguelike kind of structure to it where it presents you, you know, you do it rents you like a few stages to do, and you're just collecting the one thing at the end, and you're doing your thing, but you have a set amount of time to do it. But they have checkpoints that will reset that timer. You can kind of stay in there longer, but you're doing the same kind of thing where you're going around breaking up these things to collect the pollen that's in them, which then floats away to a nearby little seedling thing that then you can, when it's full, it'll start glowing and you can, you know, jump onto it and activate the plant, and that'll grow out and be a thing you can swing on and get around on and all that. And you're kind of just doing more of that, up to the point that you get near the seed thing. I forget what it's called specifically. But yeah, the thing you need to fill up and collect at the end of the stage, which I failed a couple times because it's not always easy, but once you kind of get the hang of, you know, keeping an eye on where the checkpoints are at, because that can reset your time if you're taking too long on things. But yeah, you're kind of getting around, getting to this thing at the end and collecting it. And usually each level, account level presents you like two or three stages to do. It'll be like, you know, this stage version A or version B, or I think it's doing all the Greek alphabet. So alpha, beta, gamma, delta, you know, that kind of stuff. And you're collecting the spectra at the end, and once you get that, you're done with that stage. And once you do all, you know, two, three, whatever it's presenting you, your account level levels up. You unlock a new Grimp, which are the characters you're playing as, who seems like you just have one for each level. It doesn't let you pick any others to do for that stuff. Which is a little weird, because the way they frame it up front, it makes it seem like you could choose, but don't. But as you play through it and collect pollen and all these other stuff. You're leveling up these meters, and it gives you what they call spice, which are essentially just like boosters to your stats and such that can make a run a little bit easier or a little bit tougher, depending on what it's given you or what you're picking for it, which can be things like increasing, you know, how much pollen's produced, how much time you have, the speed at which you can get around, which is the thing that can make it a little tougher. And yeah, there's some control changes to this as well. It's mostly the same, but when you're in the air, you can hit the X button to essentially hover in air, and you're spinning, so you'll suck in pollen to send around. But then you can pick a different place to send your Grimp around, so you can kind of get around, and maybe if you're going the wrong way, you can course correct a bit more easily here with the way that they have the level design at. So yeah, it's kind of a lot of that. I've gotten a few levels in, like I'm on I think 4 or 5, and I think the level cap is at 50, so still got a ways to go. But I'm enjoying it a lot more now that, you know, it's I can play it on a big screen and kind of enjoy the vibes that it has. It's kind of a chill game with a little bit of stress to it as you're dealing with countdown stress, but otherwise been enjoying it. It's $15, so it's not a super expensive game. I feel like the original, this one probably be up your wheelhouse, but yeah, they've definitely changed it up a bit. Particularly because I think some of its origins is in a mobile game. So that's where I think like some of the spice stuff and the need to break up the stages into smaller chunks comes from.
Right.
But, the nice thing is the different levels have all different art styles to them, different kinds of music and such. So it looks real nice and yeah, has lots of great music. So I'm looking forward to playing some more of that. But yeah. That's pretty much what I've been doing. So how about you, Brandon?
Well, as for me, I finished the main campaign for Far Cry 6, and despite it to say, I did enjoy the game, and I did think it was a lot of fun, but the way the game ended, I did not like it at all. It just kind of... there is, like, no real grand climax or anything. It just kind of ends. And because, you know, it's still an Ubisoft game, that means they still have to find ways to squeeze juice out of it. So essentially what happens is after you Castillo dies and his regime collapses, you now have to deal with an insurgency where a bunch of Castillo's remaining loyalists all over Yara are essentially trying to overthrow the interim government and instigate a civil war. And that's pretty much what the game is like afterwards. You're basically going to all the places you'd originally gotten that are and trying to hunt down whoever it is that's leading this new insurgency and, you know, end it. And that just sort of changes like every week. But yeah, so Far Cry 6, you know, it was a fun game. I just didn't like the way it ended. I thought there were a lot of different ways it could have ended that would have been better. It sometimes it kind of feels like they might have written themselves into a corner and they weren't really sure how they were going to be able to solve it. So they just kind of threw their hands up at the last minute and said, screw it. But yeah, so I played that and I got another game that I'm playing. I can't talk about it right now because of the embargo. It's another secret game, but the little bit I can say about it is I'm enjoying it, but there are definitely things about it that I don't like, and definitely also parts of it that could have definitely used a little bit more time in the oven, because some of it is a little half-baked, to put it lightly. But yeah, that's basically what I've been playing.
All right, so yeah, let's get to some news. It's the time of the month where we got the PlayStation Plus game catalog for October.
Yep.
And they are going all in on a spooky season.
Yep, as they should.
Yeah. So for PS Plus Premium and then extra tiers, we got Silent Hill 2 for the PS5.
Yeah, the remake, right?
Yeah. The one that came out last year, so that's a big mm-hmm. one to get.
Yeah.
For this. So
been told that that remake was actually pretty good. It wasn't amazing, but it did do a pretty good job of translating it into modern hardware.
Yeah, it gave Silent Hill fans hope for the first time.
Yeah.
In ages, so there's that. Also for PS5, the Until Dawn remake.
Mm-hmm.
Which I've heard some good things about, but also some not so good things about.
Yeah.
Seems like mostly since they, you know, remade it, the visuals kind of change a little bit.
Yeah.
There's always people that don't like the changes of that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you can check that one out.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, we also got for the PS5 V Rising.
Yep.
The, you know, survival action RPG game that centers around vampires.
Yep.
Specifically has a big Castlevania DLC for it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good one to get for people who want something that's not a horror game, but definitely on the spooky side.
Yeah.
So there's that. Not so much a spooky one here, but Yakuza Like a Dragon.
Yep.
For the PS5 and PS4. The first of the Yakuza games going into the RPG realm.
Yeah.
And being a very good one of those.
Yeah. If you have not played it yet, you absolutely should. It's 100% worth it.
Yeah, and just know that it's on the side of RPGs that go on forever.
Yeah.
Seems like it'll never end.
It does, eventually, but...
yeah.
But it can take a little while.
Has a skill check at a certain point to see if you've been skipping battles or not, and that tends to be a stopping point for people.
Yep.
So try to fight as much as you can.
Yeah. Basically, if you come up against something that you can fight, do yourself a favor and fight them. It will pay off later.
Yeah. So there's that. Back to some spooky stuff. We got Poppy Playtime Chapter 1.
Yeah.
PS5 and PS4. This is the... let's see. Yeah, like a spooky... or puzzle adventure thing instead of like a toy factory.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you get one of those.
Yeah, you only chapter one though, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Other couple still have to buy.
Yeah. Let's see, for PS5 and PS4, As Dusk Falls.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is one of those kind of story heavy games. Yeah, created by the lead designer of Heavy Rain and Beyond Two Souls.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a branching interactive narrative game that you can also play with friends. So, yeah, make choices and all that. Back here to another spooky game, Wizard with a Gun.
Yep.
This is a, you know, roguelike survival sandbox game.
Mm-hmm.
That you can play solo or with up to 4 players.
Mm-hmm.
Has a lot of, I remember enjoying this game a lot. Unfortunately, did not sell well enough to keep the devs afloat, so the devs have shut down, but
their
publisher has made a deal to kind of get this game out here for people to check it out. And that's your main branch of stuff for premium only. For the classics, they have Tekken 3 for PS5 and PS4.
Yep, and that's a good one.
Yeah, could be, you could call this the best fighting game on the PS1.
Yeah, pretty much. And part of it was because there's just a ton of stuff to do in that game. Obviously, you've got like the regular arcade mode. They also, I think this was the first time they introduced a tag team mode as well. And what was also fun is they had the I forget what it's called, but it was what they call it in game, but it was like a side scrolling beat 'em up that you could play where, basically you could, I think, choose like any of the characters you want, and you go through like these side scrolling stages where you're fighting, you know, a bunch of mooks and everything. And the flip side was if you could beat like the boss at the end of it, you could actually like unlock a new character. Which was easier said than done, because that final boss is probably the hardest in the entire game. Like, even harder than, you know, the enemies you come up against in the arcade mode.
Yeah, that's called Tekken Force.
Yep.
And there's Tekken Ball.
Yep, Tekken Ball. There was that too.
What else is there? There's all the multiplayer stuff. There's Team Battle.
Yep.
A lot of content here. A lot of characters as well.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, including the anime character Gon.
Yep.
Who was
he was a manga character, but yeah.
Okay. Yeah. He's a tiny little dinosaur, much like Yoda in Soul Calibur 4, completely breaks the game.
Yeah, pretty much. A tiny little dinosaur that can also breathe fire.
Yeah.
And likes to wear a tortoise shell for some reason. Yeah.
Yep.
The manga itself is actually like international, because it's mostly wordless, so very easy to, you know, translate that to other languages. It's actually really good. Artwork is absolutely gorgeous. Some of the best you'll find in the medium, if you can find it, that is.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, they just decided to put him in there. And he ended up kind of becoming iconic for that particular entry.
Yep. There's that. And that's it for the month. So
mm-hmm.
a lot of good stuff here that people should check out.
Mm-hmm.
I'll probably check out V Rising, because I've been interested in that, almost on the verge of buying it. But
mm-hmm.
Luckily, I don't need to now, so I can
check
it out and not worry about whether it's worth it or not.
Yeah. By the way, just because I wanted to remind people who are playing it, if you're playing Tekken 3, you're trying to find out how you get Gon. He's like one of the unlockable characters, and there's like two ways you can get him. You can either defeat him in the Tekken Ball mode that you previously mentioned, or by getting a high score in survival mode and then inputting the name Gon when you're asked to put it in. Yeah.
Okay. There you go for that. Anything here you're looking to check out?
Oh, yeah. That Silent Hill 2 remake, I'm definitely going to be looking at, because I love the original. Maybe V Rising if I have the time. I'd like to try Poppy Playtime, but I've seen so many playthroughs of the game that it's basically completely ruined for me. So, also, the fact that they're only giving you Chapter 1, which is like really short. Because like the individual chapters for Poppy Playtime are not very long. And also I'm definitely going to get Tekken 3 as well, because that's an oldie but a goodie.
Yeah. They had a good run there with like Tekken 1, 2, 3 and Tag Tournament.
Mm-hmm.
And then 4 came out and people were like, I don't know if they have it anymore.
Yeah.
Then they did 5 and it all was right in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been mostly smooth sailing since then.
Yeah.
There's your lineup there. And speaking of Tekken, we had Death in the Industry.
Mm-hmm.
Tomonobu Itagaki.
Head
of Team Ninja for a while there.
Mm-hmm.
Creator of the Dead or Alive series and head of the Ninja Gaiden 3D games,
the reboot, basically. Yeah.
For at least 1 and 2. I think he was gone by the time 3 left.
It was very noticeable if you played 3. Like,
much so they had to do like an extra edition. I forget what it was called, but like, this will be the better one, and still wasn't.
I think it was called Ninja Gaiden Black.
No, it was Ninja Gaiden 3.
Extra edition,
Razor edition, something like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, he was a big figure in the games industry, the Japanese industry especially. Very much a guy that acted like he was a tough guy. But the people that, you know, got to know him, like, knew he wasn't that tough.
Yeah, famously, he had kind of like this mysterious past that he kept, like, sort of, you know, cultivating this sort of aura of, like, this dude who may or may not have been running with gangsters before he entered into, before he joined the industry or whatever. He had, like, this rock star persona that he did with his, you know, his long hair and his dark glasses and everything. Obviously in real life, he wasn't really much of a tough guy. He was as much of a dork as anybody else in the industry, but, he was one of those, you know, he was around back in the day when, you know, auteurs were kind of the standard in Japanese gaming, and he was trying to cultivate the persona of one. But yeah, famously he invented the Dead or Alive series, which is famous for both the right and the wrong reasons. It's famous because obviously of the fan service, which really kind of helped. I think probably more than anything else is what really drew people to the game, only for them to find out that it's actually a very technical fighting game.
Especially compared
to some of the competitors at the time. Which is sort of the reason why it's been such a mainstay in, you know, the competitive gaming circuit for a long time. And he was there for, I think it was the first three Dead or Alive games, or was it the first four?
I think the four.
Yeah, okay, he was there for the first four.
Because four was the 360 launch title, or launch, you know, season, whatever.
Yeah.
Early on for the 360, and then I think 5 was a handful of years later. I think he left in 2008.
Yep.
And then, you know, he was gone. And so everything after that is not him.
Yeah. So yeah, he did that. He also did the reboot of the Ninja Gaiden series, where he kind of sort of welded it into the Dead or Alive universe by, you know, having, you know, that Ryu that you play in the Ninja Gaiden series is the same one that you play in the Dead or Alive series. And that's like even further confirmed by having Dead or Alive characters occasionally show up in those games. But by the time the second game was done, he was pissed at Tecmo Koei because basically there was like a bunch of like bonuses they had not paid him. And he ended up like having to go into litigation for it. And I think that actually like lasted until like 2010. So he decided to like screw it. I'm going to go and start my own studio. That ended up being the ill-fated Valhalla studio, which, ended up, was the people responsible for Devil's Third. Which was like a game that started, I think it started production in 2009, and it didn't come out until 2015 on the Wii U, I think it was. And basically, it was a game that Nintendo just let out to die.
Yeah, they weirdly went out and published it.
Yeah.
Even though it did not look like it was worthy of that.
Yeah. It was way too ambitious for what they had to work with. Honestly, you could sort of compare Valhalla's history to like what Ion Storm was like. A lot of really talented people, but too much ego and too much spending on stuff that wasn't game development. And he basically more or less left the industry after that. He did start another company a couple of years ago called Itagaki Games that's currently still in operation. But as far as like direct development, he wasn't really involved anymore.
Yeah. And he had a kind of a wild, I wouldn't say personality, like a persona that he put out was him mm-hmm. being very much a hard ass and you know, went around for quite a while in a leather jacket and sunglasses, even in indoor events. For all that, trying to be almost like Tecmo's version of what's his phrase from Konami, who would have the whip and the cowboy hat, made the Castlevania games.
Koji Igarashi?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those two very much felt like the same kind of guy that was trying to put off this tough persona. They were larger in life. Well, you know, Kojima just went around in glasses and, you know, whatnot, just made the games spoke for him. But yeah, for as much as he sounded like a tough guy, he very much had a lot of friends in the industry, especially Katsuhiro Harada, the Tekken boss for many years. So much so, if you go look up back in the day on EGM, they were doing some piece on him, like, "Oh, what are your five, you know, games you hate the most?" And he just did Tekken 1, Tekken 2, Tekken 3, Tekken 4, Tekken 5, and just really hate this game, hate this game, hate this game, and then read a whole thing for 5. And it's like, man, he got to shit talk his friend in a big magazine, big time. But yeah, they were the best of friends. Loved to rib each other, and Harada posted a big message on his Twitter about it. It's all in Japanese, so you have to translate it. But yeah, very much called him his senior at university and a rival as game developers. Like I talked recently and said, like, we'll have a drink soon, but you know, ended up not happening.
Yeah.
But yeah, talked about how hard it was to hear this news, but talked a lot about his relationship with him and all that from the 90s onward. So, yeah, definitely a legendary developer that had a huge effect on, let's say, the PS2 and Xbox gen to the 360 and PS3 gen. For a good like 10 years there, he was sort of one of the biggest names in the industry. So unfortunately, after he left, Team Ninja just did not find the spark again to make a great game after that. So but yeah, making two great Ninja Gaiden games and four great Dead or Alive games, nothing to sneeze at there.
Yep.
So yeah. But yeah, there you go. With some of those games, see how neat they were, and see how, I think, he also said, like, he was at a low point in his life, and then he found Aerosmith and Armageddon.
Yeah.
That became a huge inspiration for him. So,
yeah.
Play the Dead or Alive games and see how much Aerosmith songs come up.
Yep.
Because they're all over the place.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. There you go. Some sad news, but he left a big legacy of games to check out. So, there you go. Yeah, let's get to some more news. We got this one that's cool. N++ has been out for 10 years.
Yeah.
I think technically 11, because it came out in 2014. They announced they were working on a 10-year anniversary update, but that it would be late. Which is called 10++ for this update. It's out now for the PC. It's coming soon to the versions on PS4, Xbox One, and Switch. They say that it's going to add the most challenging levels yet for solo, cooperative, and race modes, as well as 6 new color palettes you can play as. They've also teased that they're working on a new game. So yeah, have a way for people to keep an eye on that. But yeah, this update looks cool. I'm gonna have to check this out this week. Because N++ is one of the best platformers around. A really great feel to it. That's different from everything else because it's all physics-y based.
Yep.
And yeah, one you should check out if you like your 2D platformers and want something that will not hesitate to test your skills at all times.
Oh, yeah. Very much so.
Now they're supposedly adding even harder levels. It's like, oh, God.
Mm.
And this game has, like, thousands of levels in it because they've added in all the levels from the other N games.
Mm-hmm.
I think from the original N and N Plus, which was an XBLA game. And this one has even more stages. It'll keep you busy for a long time.
Mm.
Or until you give up.
Yep.
So yeah, there you go for that. Got a game here coming to PS5 and Xbox on October 24th. It is Once Upon a Jester.
Mm-hmm.
This is a very cool game I played on, I think it was the Switch.
Mm-hmm.
From developer Bonta Avant. This is like a musical adventure game, essentially, where you're kind of playing as a musical troupe of sorts that are going through these different areas as you're trying to work your way to stealing the Royal Diamond.
Mm-hmm.
And you are kind of doing this improv theater show and being a big part of your performance and putting on a show, and then on your off days, you're going around the kingdom and talking to people and doing some fun stuff. So yeah, it's one of those kind of games that is pretty fun to play and have these shows kind of go in different ways. You got some choices for the ways you want to take them and make some pretty neat shows. So yeah, really fun. And yeah, you should check out. For that. So yeah, that's out later this week.
Mm-hmm.
Out next week here, this is the new game from Ron Gilbert, Death by Scrolling. Mm-hmm. It got announced at the, I think, the Summer Game Fest showcase.
Yeah.
But it's very different from his other games, as it's like a vertically scrolling roguelike RPG.
Mm-hmm.
Where you're kind of a dude going around doing fights and such to gather money and XP and all that kind of stuff, I assume. Yeah, you're trying to pay the ferryman's exorbitant fee.
Mm-hmm.
10,000 gold, so you're trying to collect 10,000 gold. So, yeah. Do all that kind of fun stuff. It looks like a fun time. So I'm curious to check this one out. That's out next week on October 28th on a PC, and I'll be getting PlayStation, Xbox, and Switch versions at a later date.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's a cool game. Looking forward to checking that one out.
All right.
And yeah, let's see. Also on that same date, we got the ID at Xbox Showcase.
Yep.
This is the one that they partner with IGN to show off a number of games.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like they'll also have some updates and such. As I mentioned, Thunder Lotus Games, Skybound Games, Serenity Forge, and Raw Fury will have some trailers and such to show off. Looks like this will be a 50-minute broadcast, so looks like it'll be a more concise show than they've done in the past, where they've done these as like 2 or 3 hour shows because they interrupt to do little interviews or conversations or whatever. So hopefully we'll see that next week. Yeah, see what new stuff is there, because yeah, we need some good news on the Xbox front. Mm-hmm. There's not been a ton of great stuff going on there. Especially as people are checking out these new handhelds and seeing that Windows is still fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you put it on a handheld.
Yep.
It still bugs out as much as it does on a PC.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there you go. New Xbox thing coming up.
Mm-hmm.
Then the last date I have here is an acclaimed Steam game, 1000X Resist, is finally coming to consoles on PS5 and Xbox Series X and S on November 4th. Considered one of the best narrative adventure games in recent memory. Won some awards on that front.
Oh, yeah.
They won a Peabody Award.
Mm-hmm.
And had a bunch of GDC nominations for their GDC awards this year.
Yep.
So yeah, a lot of good stuff going on there. I played a few hours of this on Steam, have not gone back to it yet, but I really enjoyed my time with it.
Same. I've played it a few hours as well, and yeah, it's definitely got like shades of Nier Automata in it if you're paying attention.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's definitely, I absolutely would love to play it on console, honestly.
Yeah. And enjoy all the weirdness there.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, that's one to check out, and yeah. That's neat. Mm. It's not a game that I dropped because it was uninteresting. It was more that it goes all out. So at times, like, oh, I need to take a little break from this, and you kind of dread going back to it.
Yeah.
Like, oh God, I got to dip back into this slice of insanity here.
Yep.
But yeah, let's see what else we got here. We got a delay, Witchbrook. I think the people have been waiting on for years. It's still not going to be coming out. They were hoping to get it out by the end of this year. But now they've said it'll be coming out in 2026. This is on Xbox, Switch, Switch 2, and PC, as well as Game Pass. So you'll still have to keep waiting for that. As I said here, we have an important update to share about Witchbrook. Originally, we planned to launch winter 2025, but despite great development progress this year, we've made this difficult decision to shift the release into next year. Witchbrook is a big project, and it's taking shape exactly as we hoped, full of charm, depth, and detail. Yeah. They show off some more stuff here, the map of the game world, and a bunch of other things, so... Just saying it still needs more time to get to where they want it to be, especially getting it ready for multiple platforms and support for languages they hadn't initially planned for. So if they do that right and don't just use AI translations.
Yeah.
Because, this is the witch game that is kind of what if Harry Potter didn't have all the baggage to it.
Yep.
So that's one that would like to go be good. So yeah. There you go.
Yep.
And speaking of next year, it seems like we'll have a new Dragon Ball game getting announced. For the 40th anniversary of Dragon Ball, I guess. They've said they are going to announce a new game at Dragon Ball Genki da Matsuri, which is an event taking place in. January 25th of next year in Chiba, Japan. So that'll be cool to see. I assume they're going to announce new content for the various games that still exist.
Yeah. And there will probably be like a big Toriyama tribute in it too.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
We'll see. But yeah, this looks like it should be a fairly big show. Yeah, they got the stage lineup here. So yeah, there's one here for Genkida Stage Plus New Game Super Announcement Stage.
Yep.
So yeah, they mention games getting some updates. Dokkan Battle, Dragon Ball Legends, Dragon Ball Genchi or Gekishin Squadra. There's Dragon Ball Card Game, Fusion World, Dragon Ball Super Divers. So probably a bunch of news there, but we'll see what the new game is. I assume it's not going to be a fighting game because they're still supporting the ones they have. But we'll see where this goes. So yeah, that's only a few months away. But yeah, let's see what else we got here. Oh yeah, Square Enix is bringing back the Dissidia game. They're making a new one, but it's on mobile. iOS and Android. Dissidia Duellum Final Fantasy. Supposed to be out next year. I believe they're going to have a closed beta test you can sign up for from November 7th to the 14th on Android devices in the US, Canada, and Japan. So you can check that out. And yeah, it seems there'll be a free to play game with in app purchases. And that seems like that makes sense for what their mobile games have been. So buy the characters, maybe have to upgrade them with gacha mechanics or whatever. But yeah, this looks pretty good, but not a game I would want to play on phones, but I'm sure there's plenty of people that would.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah. So there you go.
Mm-hmm.
We do have some Battlefield news. Battlefield 6 has reached 7 million copies sold in 3 days.
Which is really good.
Yeah, great news for DICE especially.
It's honestly, yeah, because like the last couple of entries have, they've done okay, but they haven't done great.
Yeah. Yeah, they've done fine, but not been something that vibed with the audience. And this one clearly has.
Yep.
So much so that, you know, people are very annoyed that the, like, the big issue I've seen outside of some technical stuff has been like the XP stuff has been a little too slow for people.
Mm-hmm.
They've been trying to improve that. But yeah, that's good to see, especially for the people at DICE and the other studios that worked on that game as they venture forth into a world where they're going to be working for the Saudis soon enough.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there you go. Yeah, let's get to some more industry news here. There were a bunch of stories swirling around about U.S. retailers like Target and Walmart, especially supposedly stopping stocking the Xbox stuff in their stores. At the very least, games, if not accessories and consoles and such. But Microsoft has had to put out a statement saying that, you know, this is not true. Operators saying Target and Walmart, among other retailers, remain committed partners for Xbox consoles, accessories, and games.
Yep.
I think Costco's been the big one that has supposedly pulled out completely of selling the Xbox stuff.
Yeah.
Which I forget what the reasoning is for. I think it's because costs were going too high for them.
Yeah.
That kind of triggers an internal thing where they reconsider stocking things where the prices become too unstable.
Yeah.
But yeah, the other retailers would be much more of a surprise versus just selling games that probably aren't selling all that well.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I was at our local Walmart the other day and they still had plenty of Xbox stuff there. So
yeah. But it's probably all the big stuff. Your Madden, your NBA 2K, not necessarily like a lot of the niche stuff.
Yeah.
I think that's what a lot of people are noticing and thinking it's going to be everything, and it's like, not really. But it probably does affect Microsoft's games.
Yeah.
More so than some of these others, because Game Pass has kind of told people not to go buy their games at the stores.
Yeah. And then there's the catch 22 of the fact that Game Pass is, you know, just had a huge price hike. So
yeah.
Rock and hard place, you know.
Yeah. It's going to be a rough place for them. I assume hardware should be fine. Accessories maybe, but yeah, the games are probably the thing that will be the most sketchy because they're just not as much interest in that, especially on the Xbox platforms. Like the recent physical games I bought have mostly been stuff that Best Buy is clearancing out, which has been like NBA 2K24 and NHL 24, some of that kind of stuff that was like $10. I was like, that's about as much as I'm willing to invest into like physical Xbox games at this point. It's like stuff that's really cheap before it goes away. But yeah, not really too surprised for this. We'll have to see if this continues to fester and where this kind of goes. But yeah, for now, they're denying this. Mm. But we'll see what the future has in store for Xbox. Yeah, let's get to here. Yeah, this is another EA story. The EA employees, in conjunction with the video game union United Video Game Workers, DWA Local 9433, have released a public statement criticizing the Saudi Arabia buyout of the company and calling for regulatory scrutiny. Some U.S. senators have also spoken up about this, particularly U.S. Senators Elizabeth Warren and Richard Blumenthal have sent strongly worded letters to the U.S. Treasury Secretary and Committee of Foreign Investment Chair Scott Bessent and EA CEO Andrew Wilson, expressing concern for foreign influence as a result of the deal. They say here that influence could include surveillance of Americans, covert Saudi propaganda, and selective retaliation and censorship of persons disfavored by the Saudi government. The EA statement, or the EA workers' statement, is mostly about how, yeah, they say here, EA is not a struggling company. EA's success has been entirely driven by tens of thousands of EA workers whose creativity, skill, and innovation made EA worth buying in the first place. Yet we, the very people who will be jeopardized as a result of this deal, were not represented at all when this buyout was negotiated or discussed. Yet the statement lays out concerns that studios deemed less profitable, but whose work defines EA's reputation, could be on the chopping block. They also asked about what would be done to pay off the $20 billion in debt secured before the transaction by the Saudi Public Investment Fund and Affinity Partners. If jobs are lost or studios are closed due to this deal, that would be a choice, not a necessity, made to pad investors' pockets, not to strengthen the company.
Yep.
Seems like some smart statements here. I'm sure EA will get right on it to comment on this stuff. We'll see, but it certainly would be nice to get some regulatory pushback on this deal and at least scrutinize it some. I don't know if this administration is the one to do it, but yeah, they don't have too much more time. It'll be next year that this thing goes through, and we'll see where that goes. But yeah, not looking forward to seeing that, how that turns out, but hopefully we get some people willing to push back on this deal. We'll see. But yeah, there you go. I don't know if you have anything to add, Brandon.
Not really, other than the fact that, we knew we were going to get a response like this, because the moment we realized that EA was basically being, majority owned by the Saudi royal family, that people were going to start asking questions, and we're probably going to make a few very pointed statements about that fact. And I don't think this is going to be the last we hear of it either.
Yeah. We'll have to keep an eye on that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Our last one here involves some more unionization at Blizzard.
Yep.
As I believe their neutrality agreements in the wake of acquiring Activision Blizzard has either has already expired just before or just after these announcements, or is expiring pretty soon. But yeah, the Blizzard Entertainment Platform and Technology Department has successfully voted to unionize. This seems to include about over 400 employees. Workers with a wide variety of job titles, including graphic designers, engineers, project managers on Battle.net, as well as workers in localization, quality assurance testing, and customer support on other Blizzard products. It's been recognized by Microsoft and the other represented by CWA Local 9510 in Irvine, California, and Local 6215 in Austin, Texas. Great news there. We got news that another group that mainly works on the Hearthstone and Warcraft Rumble teams have unionized. Has become members of CWA Local 9510 in Irvine, California. This includes over 100 workers, including software engineers, artists, QA testers, and producers. That has been recognized by Microsoft, so more good news there. Good to see.
So, once again, as I have been saying over and over, the momentum has been on the side of labor these last couple of years, and the video game industry is no different. And we're going to see more and more of this happen. As the industry is, you know, going through its contractions right now. So, yeah. Watch this space, because, again, we're going to see more unionization talk going.
Yeah. So that'll be good. We'll see if there's any more that happens with Blizzard and Activision. Because that deal, at least the unionization deal, seems like it's is winding down as far as the people represented. So we'll see if Microsoft continues to allow that to happen or if they go to their natural ways and try to stop it.
Yeah.
Spreading further. So we'll have to see.
Mm.
But yeah, that's some good news to end on here. And yeah, I guess where we'll do it for the week. Yeah, thank you to Brandon and Danner for Danner's not here. Thank you to Brandon for joining this week.
Always.
We'll be back next week as our last of October before Halloween hits and that whole weekend happens. And then we gain an hour to have some fun. Let me see what's coming out this week. Yeah, we got a bunch. Jurassic World Evolution 3, Ninja Gaiden 4, Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines 2 are out on the 21st. Dispatch on the 22nd. 23rd is Bounty Star, The Moros Tale of Graveyard Clem, Double Dragon Revive, Dreamed Away, Full Metal Schoolgirl, The Lonesome Guild, Persona 3 Reload on the Switch 2, Plants vs. Zombies Replanted, and I'll add here... Car Wash Simulator 2 are out that week, or that day, the 23rd. On the 24th, Chicken Run Extraction, and Once Upon a Katamari. And the 25th is Halls of Torment and Recreation. So a lot of stuff coming out this week on pretty much every platform.
Yep.
A lot of stuff to check out and keep it on. We'll talk about probably a few of these games at least for next week's show. So, yeah. I think that's going to do it. So, yeah, thank you for tuning in. If you enjoy the show, if you let friends and family know, they should check it out and select strangers that are also excited for games coming out here.
This month. Yeah, we got some good ones coming out.
And, yeah, thank you all for tuning in. Hope you have a good week ahead. We'll see you all next time. Have a good one.
Bye.